You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Rodo. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Rodo Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Monday, Memorial Day, May 29th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. Alongside the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, the King, Scott Angle, and CTM Baseball's Matt Modica, my name is Greg Sussman. Happy Monday, happy Memorial Day, everybody. Happy to be here on this holiday. Happy to be raring to go. A lot of baseball today. A lot to talk about from the weekend. So we have fun 2 hours. Go very, very quickly. Corey, what's going on, man?
Ain't nothing much. Chilling. Just getting ready. Like you say, got a big day in fantasy baseball. Obviously, Roto Experts mock draft is going on. I want to ask the King some questions about his team. You know what I'm saying? So I know Matt Modica's got some things going on as far as his baseball teams and getting ready for football. And it's Memorial Day, so you know, we want to honor, you know what I mean, the United States military. Obviously, it's real important today that we take time out to remember them.
100%, Corey, no question about it. Scotty, what's happening?
Happy Memorial Day, everyone. Remember to get your lineups in by 1 p.m.
Ooh,
Eastern
good
today.
Good job, Scotty.
And also, too bad I didn't have him in my fantasy lineup, but congratulations to my friend Austin Dillon for his first Monster Energy Cup series of his career last night. Hope you had him in your fantasy lineup. He won for the first time ever as Jimmy Johnson ran out of gas with two laps left.
That's pretty cool. I listened to you and Sean yesterday morning, too, so that's what's up.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. We've had Austin on the show before, so friend of our program and our channel.
Is Sean Angle a big fan of Austin Dillon?
He likes Austin. You know, he's spoken to Austin before off the air. We've had him on the air on this channel. A guy I love talking fantasy football with during the winter. Big Carolina Panthers fan. He has season tickets.
All right, there you go. Matty Mo, what's going on? Happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day. We want to thank the brave men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice for us. Everybody should remember that today. And, you know, summer is upon us.
Yes, fireworks tonight, right?
No fireworks tonight.
That's not
the parade yesterday.
July 4th.
Oh, my bad.
But the good
wrong
news
holiday.
Is
Labor Day?
No, this is Memorial Day.
Oh, okay.
4th of July is the fireworks.
Oh, okay.
The good news is we can now wear white. Where we are allowed to for the next 3 months. Put on those white pants, the white shirt. You can do it all right now.
See, I can't have a problem with white pants.
Why?
Because you can't wear no drawers. You know what I'm saying?
It's
because
true.
You see, like, the lining.
Well, you can wear white drawers, probably.
Well, you could just bust out your white Knicks shirt.
But I'm talking about the pants, the lower half of my body, Scott. White pants, you know what I'm saying?
White Knicks shirt, blue Knicks shorts. You look good.
Thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Okay. On the program today, we have a lot of baseball, of course, from this weekend to get into, including Danny Salazar's demotion. We have Jameson Taillon all of a sudden coming back. David Price all of a sudden coming back. Charlie Morton all of a sudden going away. Mike Trout's potential injury. We got a lot going on baseball-wise and football to get to, too. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning. We are just getting started here on a Memorial Day Monday on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and, of course, Fantasy Sports Network TV. Yeah, that too. We'll be back right after this. I noticed that Scott and Angle had a bunch of USA themed music from Memorial Day, which is awesome. And somehow we got stuck with the Black Eyed Peas. So I'm not really sure.
You don't like the Black Eyed Peas?
No.
No?
Not in like, that's since I was like 10. At like Bar Mitzvah, and they had the song that said, you know, L'chaim. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But that was like 20, that was 15 years ago, so I'm good.
What about Fergie?
Yeah, I'm interested in Fergie. Although I read before she like cleaned up, she was like a meth addict, I believe. It's pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty wild, right? All right, let's get into some headlines, some of the baseball stuff. I do want to do some football a little bit later on.
There's a lot of baseball headlines I really think we need to get to. And let's start at the top, as I said, with Danny Salazar, because we speculated on this a lot last week. What would happen with the Indians rotation? I know, as I told you, all you guys, I invested in Mike Clevenger pretty heavily. Like, I wanted this guy, I trusted this guy, and I expected a lot from him. Ultimately, despite a less than stellar start over the weekend, he's still going to be in the rotation, but it's not going to be Josh Tomlin, who had a complete game yesterday out of nowhere. It's not going to be Trevor Bauer, who is, you know, consistently consistent. It's going to be actually Danny Salazar headed into the bullpen. And this is a guy we talk about whenever he starts, a tremendous strikeout potential, lets a lot of runs, goes his four innings, throws 100 pitches, and really can't harness all of the control and all of the stuff that he needs in order to be successful. They made the decision to move Salazar, who on draft day was, outside of Corey Kluber, going the highest out of any of these guys. It's very, very interesting to see Danny Salazar headed to the bullpen. Well, Deke, I'm going to start with you. Is this something that is a long-term thing with Danny Salazar? Like, if we have him, he's going to be a long man in the bullpen. Do we drop Danny Salazar? Like, because we know he's not going to end up as the closer with Cody Allen and Andrew Miller there. So I don't know what value we have left with Danny Salazar.
Well, I think this is a short-term solution that can pay long-term dividends. Salazar is leading MLB among qualified starting pitchers with a 12.55 K per nine. His ERA is 5.50. His xFIP is like 3.52 or something like that. This is, I mean, we've seen this happen before. Carlos Carrasco in the bullpen found himself. Danny Duffy in the bullpen. The problem with Danny Salazar, this is a very talented pitcher. If I could hold on to him, I want to hold on to him. If I need to drop him in a 12-team league, I'm going to monitor the situation very closely, because I still think this is a guy in the second half. He'll probably get in that rotation. Somebody's going to get hurt, or somebody's just going to pitch too poor. And he's a guy that could possibly lead you to a championship. The problem with Danny Salazar, and what could help him in the bullpen, is it's his repeating his delivery. He never seems to be able to do that. His mechanics is a major issue for him. So if he can get this down pat, find something, pitching out of the stretch maybe. We've seen Duffy do it. Strasburg's doing it. So maybe that's the answer. The Indians have a great pitching coach in Mickey Callaway. I think this is an extreme talent that, you know, right now it looks awful. It's something you don't want to deal with. And with the state of the starting pitching market, maybe you can't hold on to him. But if you can, I would.
I have Danny Salazar in three or four leagues, so I am actively dealing with this issue. Now, one of them is an American League-only league with no bench, so I don't have any choice but to leave him in there, but I'll still get the strikeouts. In the other leagues, there's no way I'm cutting him. I'm benching him because the strikeout potential is too good, and like Matt is alluding to, maybe he finds himself in the bullpen. This guy has a disgusting 1.59 whip because, in addition to control issues, he can get hit. But he's sixth in the league in strikeouts. So, you know, he's something unique that we're dealing with here. You know, we've dealt with it with guys like Duffy, et cetera. But I don't think you can cut him because somebody else will then snatch him up and wait for him to come back and improve.
Yeah, someone could snatch him up. But to me, that philosophy, Corey, probably isn't what we should be thinking of. Like, if I cut a guy, I can't worry somebody else can snatch him up. I cut him because I don't want him.
Yeah, you cut him and you let it be somebody else's
problem.
Headache.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is a situation that's kind of, I think he gets back into the rotation just because of the talent. Like you said, obviously the strikeouts are very intriguing for fantasy owners, but the guy can't keep the ball in the ballpark. The command is terrible. So tough call going to have to be made. I think it depends on your own personal roster construction.
I don't think I didn't mean it's like I'm worried about somebody else. I don't want to cut him and regret it because I think he's got an opportunity to correct his problems here. And if I end up cutting him, I may regret it.
Here's my argument for holding on to him, even in a 12-team league. It seems like this season, 12-team leagues are getting kind of like drained on. Usually the waiver wire is deeper, but I guess with the 10-day DL, people seem to be stockpiling more pitching. So there's not that great of, or the abundance of talent on the waiver wire. It just doesn't seem to be there this season from what I've noticed. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I've noticed. So a talent like Salazar, if Salazar gets cut in one of my online championships this next week or so, I'm going to be actively trying to add him.
Yeah, I agree about a 12-team league because I'm in a 12-team league. I have enough pitching depth where I can afford to bench him and still, you know, have some guys that I can flow in and out of the lineup. And I look on my waiver wire and there's just not that much there. And if anything is there, it might be the same situation as Salazar, where like the best guy out there is like a Vince Velasquez, and he's a headache too.
He is, but what I can tell you about Vincent Velasquez is every 5 days he's going to start.
Well, would you
for now,
hold on?
For now.
How about this?
And how is he going to do every 5 days?
How about this? Two guys that just recently went to the DL this weekend, say like a Charlie Morton or sure. Jesse Hahn.
Yeah.
Would you hold on to those guys who are currently DL'd, or would you keep a guy like Danny Salazar? For me, the answer is simple. It's Salazar.
Well, I think it's really interesting because Charlie Morton's pitched relatively well. Like, when it comes to Hahn, it's Salazar. I'll give you that. I think with Charlie Morton, it becomes a little bit of a different discussion. Of course, Charlie Morton hurts his lat, and what makes me say Morton to that answer, it's not a shoulder issue, it's not an elbow issue, it's not a hand issue, a wrist issue, a forearm issue, it's a lat issue. And I think that is something you can overcome. I know when he gets healthy, he goes right back to the rotation. From my understanding, Salazar's healthy. If Charlie Morton's cut, I think I make that move, Matt.
For me, 108 Salazar, too. Like I say, I'm a big XFIP guy, a 352 XFIP. The BABIP is 361. It's not like 4-something, which it was earlier. The home runs, as Corey alluded, the control and the home runs have really crushed him. So, and for me, I think it's just a mechanical issue. I mean, I really believe that. I wouldn't even mind him going to the minors for like 2 or 3 weeks and ironing things out.
To be honest with you, I'd be more interested if he did that.
But in the bullpen, you can find yourself. I mean, you see guys, they get that, like Danny Duffy, before last season, he did it like a year or two prior to that, mm-hmm. where he went to the bullpen and was dominant. And
well,
you know,
from my understanding, Matt, and if I remember correctly, he pitched that entire year in the bullpen. He came out and started the next year in the bullpen, then came out in like May, and the rest of the year he was in the rotation, and now he's Danny Duffy. Danny Salazar, if you're giving me the Danny Duffy timeline, he's going to be in the bullpen the rest of this year, then come back next year and be great.
Yeah, but he's been a starter long enough.
Sure.
I think it's just one of those things where, I'll repeat, where it's maybe it's just pitching out of the stretch, something where he needs. I mean, we've seen Paxton do it last season, where he made adjustments to his mechanics. So when I always look for talent. I always think talent wins out. I understand people are frustrated. I mean, a 550 ERA and what a 160 whip is just horrific, and it has really hurt you. But there's still 4 months in the season. You got to remember that with baseball. It's such a marathon, such a grind. If you got like 82 points in, say, your league and somebody has 105, you are not out of it. I mean, you could make up 10 points in a weekend. I've lost a 12-point lead in a weekend. So, I mean, I'm just saying, bear with it, bear down, and, you know, keep on grinding.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I don't think there's anything better on my free agent list that can give me the upside of a Danny Salazar. Now, I am disappointed, and I am frustrated because I drafted him as my third or fourth pitcher in a lot of leagues. But he's been very, very frustrating, thankfully, with some of the other dominant pitching I have in some of my leagues. I've been able to overcome it.
You gave me Charlie Morton and Jesse Hahn a moment ago, guys that just went on the DL over the weekend. What about someone that's coming off the DL? What if Jameson Taillon is out there?
I would have been all in on Jamin. I tried getting Taillon. In the leagues that he became available, I just didn't have enough money to compete with it. He's a guy, I think he pitched like 3 innings yesterday.
He did.
He had like 6 strikeouts. This is a kid that, you know, unfortunately he had to deal with a serious problem, and we wish him the best. So if he's healthy, and I'm surprised he's back on the mound so soon.
Yeah.
I definitely want him for that second half.
In our league, he was the most expensive pitcher to go last night. Well over
$300. $311 in our league. I get it. All in. Does that mean dropping Danny Salazar over Jameson Taillon?
Currently, if I had to make that decision, I would.
Okay.
I know he's coming back. And, you know, these guys weren't that far off in price. I mean, Taillon might have been 20, 25 picks later. But if you look at the guys with Salazar this season, like a Julio Teheran, a Jose Quintana that went a little before him, they're not pitching so hot neither. So, I mean,
it's interesting because in my league, and I've said this before on the show, that three pitchers went in like a 4-spot range, and I had them all in the same tier. Danny Salazar, who I had ranked 1, James Paxton, and Lance McCullers. Those three guys went in the same tier for me. I, luckily enough for now, was the one that went out with McCullers. But
nice.
Salazar was the guy I wanted, so it's really, really interesting.
I think a lot of us wanted Salazar. A lot of fantasy analysts were talking him up during before the season. There's a guy who was an all-star last year.
100%.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, as Scott mentioned, you have to set your lineups at 1 p.m. That means we have decisions to make. We'll try to make one of those for you when we come back. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And as Scott mentioned just a couple moments ago, first game of the day, so at 1 o'clock, a lot of afternoon games here. So if you're hanging out more late, I know it's not supposed to be nice, at least in New York City, so you're going to hang out watching baseball. But make sure you set your lineups by 1 o'clock. Perhaps the toughest decision you're going to have this week, given that the time that games start, is who to start with players that, you know, left yesterday, didn't play over the weekend, stuff like that. And perhaps the biggest name out of all of those is, well, the biggest name in the sport, which is Mike Trout. Trout left yesterday's game after stealing second base, and he hurt his hand. And, of course, it was precautionary, quote-unquote. He had an X-ray. Looks like that was okay. He has an MRI today. None of the four of us, you know, maybe Corey, but the other three of us have no idea what that MRI is going to say. Right? We have no idea how bad that hand is going to be. Corey, if you were a Mike Trout owner, what do you do today?
Oh, boy, this is a tough call right there. Obviously, you want to wait to the last moment to see what kind of information you can get, you know, follow on Twitter, listen to us here, and figure out what the information is. That's your first step. If we don't get no definitive information by that time, I'm going to go ahead and put him in the lineup because the X-rays did come back negative. That's good news, but, you know, the pain tolerance could be something. I think you got to roll with him. No, I can't. I'm not comfortable leaving Mike Trout on my bench.
Scotty?
I have Mike Trout in the Granite Street Tavern League. So I'm dealing with this, and I'm going with the way Corey's talking about. It's 1 o'clock. We might not get the MRI results till after that. X-rays were negative. At least we have one test to go by that's somewhat positive. The one thing that does worry me, though, it's a thumb. You know, it could affect how he grips the bat, etc. But still, you know, it's the best player in the game. If it doesn't, the first indications were it doesn't appear to be serious. The MRI is going to confirm that, possibly.
Or dispute it.
Or dispute it. I have to go with the initial report. It's all I have to go by. I'm benching Trey Mancini. I'm talking about Mike Trout here. You know, Tony and I were talking about this. Just pop in another player. My other options are like, I don't want to use Kyle Schwarber this week. I don't want to use Seth Smith. So I'd rather take the gamble and use Mike Trout.
I mean, I own Trout in a couple of leagues. He will definitely be in my lineup unless I hear something that confirms, I mean, that's contradicts it and says that this is something serious. You have to take that gamble. The other thing is, I hate these leagues where everything locks at 1 o'clock. That makes no sense to me. The games should lock as the games start. There's a 1 o'clock game, that team should lock. 4 o'clock game, 7 o'clock game, and so on. So,
like in football.
Yeah, I just don't get why these leagues do that. Everything locks at, you know, one time. That makes no sense to me. But Mike Trout is the best player in the game. So I'm going to roll him out there unless I hear something different.
Yeah, well, a few weeks ago what happened was he missed the beginning of the week and then he came back like on Friday. So what if you still get 3-4 days of stats? You want that.
I agree with that if you guarantee 3 or 4 days. What scares me is the MRI comes back not so great and he goes on the DL and then, you know, you're left with an injured player all week, obviously.
It's one out of 14 you can survive.
Although, Scott, I guess you could also make the argument that having an injured Mike Trout in your lineup is probably better than Kyle Schwarber at the moment.
Yeah, it is. And it's considering that Seth Smith just hit over 0.53 for the past week, I think it's better than having Seth Smith in my lineup.
So those are that's obviously the big story, right? Mike Trout and kind of following along with him. But then you have some injured guys coming back. We mentioned Jameson Taillon, and then you also get to David Price. Price is going to start today, which was really surprising to me, given that, you know, the last rehab start didn't go very well. We thought they might give him another day in the rotation, another day in the rehab assignment in AAA, the AAA rotation, especially with some of the starts that they had gotten from Brian Johnson, for instance, with Boston. Now, Price back in the lineup, back in the rotation, back on the mound today versus the White Sox. Obviously, Corey, you have him. This is what you're waiting for. It's May 29th. He's missed 2 months. You got to activate David Price today.
Yeah, you activate him. You throw him out there. Listen, he's going to be on a tight leash today. You mentioned these starts in the in down there in AAA. You know, getting hammered in AAA like that, sometimes you got to understand that probably just working through some mechanics, some kinks and stuff like that. So the results may not be important as far as, you know, what you see on the field, but there's probably certain things they wanted to see mechanically and stuff like that to make sure that elbow was in good shape. So I would look past that, but do understand that that on his start today, he's going to be on a tight leash and they're going to keep a good eye on him.
To Corey's point, you know, I was watching a breakdown on the MLB Network with John Smoltz, and they asked Smoltz the same thing, and he pretty much came back with what you said. He said, look, I've been on rehab assignments throughout my career because Smoltz dealt with a lot of injuries. He said, not only you might be working on certain things, don't pay any attention to the run output. And he's had two bad starts, he said, because you're just coming in and trying to get in your routine.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing. Meanwhile, every minor leaguer that's coming to face you is coming amped up like it's the World Series,
yeah,
so they can tell everybody, I got a double or a triple off of David Price. So you have to remember that.
Or that 3,000th career hit.
Yeah, or the 3,000th career minor league hit, yeah, I guess. you know,
he's making a joke.
But look, he's just working on stuff. They were not going to rush him back before he's ready. And the word I got on Price before, when I was doing my insider reports in the preseason for the exclusive Edge package, is that last year, mentally, he didn't handle Boston very well, because Boston's a big pressure environment, but put a lot of pressure on himself. but not with Chris Sale now. But Chris Sale now there being the guy, Price can put less pressure on himself, and his mind may be more at ease this season than it was last year.
That's so interesting.
When he allowed the most hits in baseball last year.
So interesting you put it like that. Now Sale is there, so he's the guy.
Yeah.
You go tell David Price that Chris Sale is the guy. See how that works out for you. I think it's really
everybody's paying attention to Chris Sale right now.
Yeah,
you're grabbing all the headlines.
I understand that. It's... You pointed out Price's struggles, right? Both mentally with Boston and obviously on the mound, where he'll have more hits than anybody in baseball.
Yeah.
And that was the reason I know Corey and I were both not so in on Chris Sale for the exact reason. Sale obviously has had no issues adjusting to Boston.
He was looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I heard.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's worked out very, very well, of course, for Boston and for Chris Sale. So you have David Price, of course, returning here today. J.D. Martinez, quick note, he left yesterday's game early. Looks like he's going to be okay. His foot got a little sore. He could be back in the lineup as soon as today. Ben Zobrist didn't play most of the weekend. He has a wrist injury. He hopes to be back in the lineup today. Yonder Alonso returned, played for the first time all week yesterday.
He got a hit.
Had a double in his first at bat and get on base after that. And I guess that's about it, right? Another injury?
Could I backtrack to David Price real quick?
Come on down.
I was a David Price believer prior to the season before he was injured. I don't really care what happened in the minor leagues. This is a proven guy. So, I like John Smoltz said and stuff, don't pay no mind to that. But just, he's coming back. I mean, the main thing is health here. That's the main thing you want to see from today. But the White Sox do hit left-handed pitching very well. So this isn't, in my opinion, just a layup. I mean, the guy they're rolling out there, Holmberg, I mean, maybe Boston scores like a dozen runs. But I'm just saying, for Price, I don't think it's Holmberg. just a layup, an easy thing to do. I understand if you have to put him out there due to all the injuries. I have him in a couple of leagues. I am putting him out there in some, and others I'm not.
Yeah, I have a situation where I have the luxury of maybe not using him, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to use him over J.C. Ramirez.
Holmberg.
There you go.
Who's Holmberg?
He's a guy. He's a Jag.
He's a Jag.
He's a Jag for sure.
What's his first name?
Scott David.
David, right. David Holmberg.
That's my middle name.
It's true.
Yeah.
David Holmberg. Sounds like an accountant.
It does.
Holmberg and Holmberg. What are you trying to say?
I'm not trying to say anything.
So he says, okay. It sounds like a count.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I mentioned some of these injured players. I mentioned Jameson Taillon. Well, I mentioned Charlie Morton as well.
I get what you're saying now. I didn't realize
that. You didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's kind of what you do to us.
Who's us?
What?
We talked about J.D. Martinez. He left yesterday's game with an injury. Brandon McCarthy also left the start over the weekend with an injury. He's dealing with a knee issue that he has dealt with. Tendonitis, he says he's had it all year. He's going to make his next start. The problem with that is that it's Brandon McCarthy.
Yep.
And if it was Chris Sale that says this, no problem. But when Brandon McCarthy says it, you just take a little bit more time to think about it. Hyunjin Ryu pitched very well out of the bullpen the other day. Brandon McCarthy,
to the point where you guys picked him up in the GST.
Brandon McCarthy leaves the game with a little knee injury. Is there something to look at here?
Hey, look, he pitches well, but it's as you say, it's Brandon McCarthy. I don't see him lasting throughout the season. He never does. That's why the Dodgers have like 7 or 8 starters. It's pretty much survival. Who's going to, you know, stay healthy throughout the season? Can Rich Hill keep avoiding blisters? I mean, Alex Wood, who I love, I'm concerned about his health throughout the season, being able to complete a 6-month season as a starter. So it's going to be interesting in Los Angeles. I mean, I'm still pissed that Kershaw couldn't make it out of 5 innings yesterday.
I'll tell you about it. We'll get to the game in a bit.
He got cracked by the long ball yesterday. But talk about blisters. You know, we see so many guys missing time or not being effective because of blisters. Look at Johnny Cueto yesterday. Two blisters, right? 6 innings pitch, 8 strikeouts, 1 earned run.
Pitch great.
Non-contact.
Pitch absolutely great.
Yeah. See, the blisters in Cueto, they don't touch where he grips the ball.
As it turns out, it didn't. And the last note about Johnny Cueto's teammate, Madison Bumgarner.
What's up with him?
Going to throw at the end of this week, yeah.
Thank you.
There you go.
So maybe 2 more weeks for Ty Black in the rotation.
I don't agree. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Who do you think they're going to bump?
Bump Matt Kane. Ty Black
has
gone 7 innings.
Ty Black has gone at least 7 innings in the last 4 starts. He's been fantastic. He didn't strike anybody out.
He won't strike anybody out. When they bid for Ty on, Chris Vaccaro cut Black.
Yeah, well, the problem with Ty Black is he didn't strike anybody out.
Yeah.
At all.
But he does keep it. He's had one bad start that's blown up his ERA.
He's coming back, Madison Bumgarner, and John Gray also nearing a rehab assignment, so keep an eye on that.
Nice.
We'll return. We had a bunch of baseball games I want to go over from yesterday. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Matt has talked about it all morning long.
And there you go, Scotty.
And he's upset. But I want to try to make him feel better. So let's talk about it. I said on Friday I was furious that... furious. Just like surprised. Kind of annoyed. I didn't really care that much, to be honest with you. That the Dodgers and Cubs weren't Sunday Night Baseball. That the stupid Mets and Pirates were. And I was like, why is this Sunday Night Baseball? I wanted John Lester versus Clayton Kershaw to be Sunday Night. Instead, it was Sunday at 4 o'clock, and it was just bombs away in this one. Before you looked, it was a 6-4 ball game, and you know it only got worse from there, finishing it at 9-4. As you said, Matt, a couple times here this morning, Clayton Kershaw could not get through 5, and it's not very often we say that. 4 1/3, he allowed a season-high 11 hits, tied for a season-high 4 runs. Of course, for the 4 1/3 innings pitch, a season-low of innings pitch, 6 strikeouts, 2 walks, season-high 3 home runs. He allowed 109 pitches in those 4 1/3 innings. The ERA, despite that, it's only 2.37 because, you know, Clayton Kershaw is amazing. Disappointing start for Kershaw. On the other side of that, Matt, same thing. John Lester, 3 1/3, 7 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. Not a good start for either ace here.
First, let me touch on Lester. Lester's a guy that at this point in the season, if I don't own him, and we're talking redraft leagues, not keeper or anything, but he's a guy that I'm actively going after now.
Okay.
He's a guy, his ERA is somewhere near 4, high 3s. But this is a guy that's there for you every September.
3.86.
Okay. Yeah. And I came into this season with my expectations of John Lester. I wasn't banking on a 2016 season. I was saying I see him more as a 2015 season, John Lester, which is still very good, like a 3.30-ish ERA. And he's a guy that's going to give you 200 innings, a guy that down the stretch you can rely on. Same goes for Johnny Cueto. I'd want to be owning him now, too. You know, get these veteran guys that are there for you. Yesterday's game just got out of hand. I mean, the home runs. I mean, Chavez Ravine looked like a launching pad. Balls flying out of the park. Belly bombs are always welcome. I love seeing Cody Bellinger go deep. But watching Clayton Kershaw, and the funny thing is, I was watching the game, and the Dodgers broadcast team was saying how the slider hasn't looked as good all season. It's the slider from last year. And that's been the only knock on Kershaw, really, this season, besides the home runs he has allowed. He's allowed more home runs this year than he allowed in 150 innings last year. But, you know, the slider, he wasn't getting the strikeouts, but the last couple of starts, that's back. That's over. Mm-hmm. This was an aberration. You know, the Cubs are still a really good team. So I'm sure
I like what you did with Bellinger there. Belly bomb. Maybe we can get a White Castle sponsorship for him.
That's a good one, Scott. I can't take credit for
White Castle fast food.
By the way, Bellinger, in 31 games, 10 homer, fastest Dodger ever to 10 homers.
All right.
I think that shows how good he is.
Maybe. I mean, he's like his first hitting like 30 at bats.
The Dodgers have the Dodgers have a rich history.
Unlike the Mets.
He's
unlike your New York Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, right. I love Bellinger.
Different sports.
I mean, the 10 home runs are great, and I spent like $600 on him in one league. And I do think he's gonna be good the rest of the season. I do think he's gonna have his slumps as well. I mean, striking out 30% of the time. But the power is real. The Dodgers need him in that lineup, too. They're a better team with Cody Bellinger in that lineup.
Do you think Kershaw might need another cortisone shot?
Epidural shot, I hope not. Because remember the back, that's a problem last year. I'm just going to chalk this up. I mean, look, the Cubs are still one of the best
Cubs,
teams.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Rizzo, I know it's a left-hander, is one of the best players
killing
in
right
baseball.
Now.
I mean, what's the back of his card last 3 years?
Crazy.
280, 32, 90. You know, I mean, Javi Baez took him deep. So it's weird watching him.
So did Wilson Contreras.
It's watching him in the fifth inning with like starting with like 103 pitches. That's something you just never see.
Yeah, and Rizzo after like he went cold that first month, and then Bryant, had the cold first few weeks. Nobody's remembering this now.
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, also of note, Mike Montgomery pitched almost two innings yesterday. So those that thought maybe Montgomery getting closer to replacing Eddie Butler, I'm not sure how close we are there.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think at some point, though, still, he will be in that rotation. I think he's a guy that's going to pay you dividends in fantasy. I said it that first week in New York here when we did the live drafts about Alex Woods, a guy you want to own, still draft him the following week when he didn't get the rotation spot.
Yeah.
I think Montgomery, I can't believe Eddie Butler is going to be the guy long term. He pitched four innings the other day, two innings, This is a guy, somebody might, Lackey might go on the DL, somebody might get hurt, and he's the guy that will step in, I believe.
And we've been talking about how Arrieta is not Arrieta. He had another shaky start over the weekend, but they get the Padres this week, and it's a recipe for things going right. Butler
Unless
might have another good
Ross.
Start, and I think Arrieta will take advantage of this. With Joe Ross, you figured he was good against the Mariners, and he'd be good against the Padres, too. He allowed a career-high 12 hits yesterday.
He was very good against the Mariners and god-awful versus the Padres yesterday. But real quick on Arrieta, as a person who avoided him this season entering drafts, if I can get him at a discount right now, I'm going to go in on him because, the strikeouts are there. The walk rate is gone back. Last season, that was a problem. He had control issues. This season, it's improved. I still think at some point maybe he can get hurt, but if I can buy him right now at a discount, he's the guy I'm going after.
He's got to adjust. Right now it's adjusting with pitch selection with him. It's like hitters are not going for the cutter anymore. They're sitting on the fastball, and it's been a problem.
Yeah, the word is getting out.
Baseball is a constant game of adjustments, and right now it's on Jake Arrieta to adjust.
It is, but he's got like a 63% left on base. His xFIP is 358. Look at a guy with a K per nine over 10, a walks per nine under 2.5. There's a lot to like here.
I agree with you. I think he will get better. A lot of those runners are coming off base.
But you are correct about the sequencing. Yeah. I think that he's made mistakes, and when he makes that mistake, he's getting hurt.
Yeah, he's sitting on the fastball. I believe he's a better pitcher than that. I remember when he first came over from Baltimore, and he just didn't have anything in terms of selection. He added that cutter, and he lived on it to the point where, he was a Cy Young guy. But, now it's just like the league's catching him. They're adjusting back. So he's got to come up with something here. We talked about it. I talked about it with Matt Shoemaker, who also got bombed over the weekend. You constantly got to stay ahead of the hitters. Unless you got spectacular stuff, you can't rely on the same things. Like Chris Archer has spectacular stuff.
Chris Archer, by the way, in May, the best K per nine of anybody. 13.9, almost 14 strikeouts per nine. Absolutely insane. Let's talk about Joe Ross a little bit here. Mm-hmm. So
let's not.
Sorry, Corey. Who's in your Tide Warp team now?
I know.
Corey, welcome to the pain that I ride every week with Joe Ross.
Comes back up for the minors on Tuesday. Matt was ecstatic, jumping up and down for Joe Ross. He comes and pitches brilliantly against Seattle. Then the guy's looking at his chops for San Diego, probably sat down in his big chair on Memorial Day Sunday, ready to watch Joe Ross. He didn't have to watch him for long.
He ain't got his ass beat.
Here's the issue with some of the Joe Ross and, the Tyler Glasnow biz that we see coming out this morning. Some people, and I'm not saying anybody at this table.
Who are you calling some people?
But some people who play fantasy baseball. Some people play fantasy baseball. What are you doing? What is that?
Because he owns Joe Ross.
Anyway, some people play fantasy baseball. Will put in their bids, and maybe they'll go to sleep or whatever. Or they won't look back at what they did Sunday, and they'll throw in a ton of money on a Joe Ross and say, and not even look at what he did Sunday. And
you, I mean, I need him.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, turn out though. But look, if you believe in Joe Ross long term, that start yesterday,
I didn't
shouldn't be the say.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, look, pitchers are going to have bad starts. That's going to happen. Yeah, I mean. So if you and look, if Joe Ross can get it together in that rotation, the opportunities there. Just look at Tuesday night, what he was able to do. Yesterday was awful. He needs to figure it out. Figure it out fast. Figure it out at the major league level. I think this kid does have talent. It made me a little biased from my ownership. I spent a lot of money on him. He has disappointed, you know. But if my point is, if you believe on a guy, one start.
Yeah, it's not going. I didn't eat that start yesterday. I eat the ones this week, no, but I didn't eat the, I didn't
you,
eat
you
the ones
You got lucky
yesterday.
Because you didn't throw him out there. But, you know, it is unnerving when you allow 12 hits to San Diego.
No doubt.
So who does he have this week?
He's pitching, I believe, at Oakland on Saturday.
I would say you got to roll with him.
Yeah, I mean,
if he was going to Cleveland, I would say no.
This is a big start for him, though.
Yeah, this is a very pivotal.
He
start
does
for
need
him.
To after giving up 12 hits and stuff like you said.
He needs confidence.
Mm-hmm. Lance McCullers is not a guy that needs confidence. He let three runs and previously all to Jonathan Scope yesterday in the first and second inning. That was it. He didn't let anything else. And the Orioles have now lost seven in a row.
Baseball.
And yesterday was the first start. For Alec Asher, your guy, talked him up. And unfortunately, Ubaldo Jimenez pitched better yesterday than Alec Asher did, and that's an issue.
It was the most relief innings in his career for Ubaldo Jimenez. Didn't expect Alec Asher to get bombed. I actually started monitoring Asher because you turned me on to him. And you know, it just terrible, terrible start yesterday.
Yeah, he pitched like Ubaldo Jimenez yesterday. Usually pitches when he starts. The good news for me was in my AL only, he was on the bench. So I escaped that one. I mean, I don't know. Baltimore, I don't know how Baltimore does it every year. Would they have, no pitching?
And ever.
Somehow they're just always around, hanging around, fighting for first place or a wild card. And I just don't get it.
Scott, question about Jonathan Scope. Like I said, he's basically all the offense for Baltimore yesterday. And Scope on the year is a name that we talked about a lot in February and March. Is somebody that the fantasy community, half of it was super in on, and then half of it were not.
I was in.
There you go. So you're one of the people that were in. Have you been excited, happy, pleased with what you've received thus far?
I think I don't have money in any of my teams, but in terms of my prediction,
really
I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied, with what you've received from Jonathan Scope. Trey Mancini is still getting on base, but he's not putting any counting numbers up the last few weeks. But
what's that doing, Jonathan Scope?
I'm talking Orioles.
All right, we'll talk more about Jonathan Scope on the other side, as well as somebody on the other side of the field yesterday in that game that I got to ask the panel if they are pleased with. Stick around. Road Rush the Morning continues after this. Spring Dawn, Jonathan Scope, 275, 7 homers, 22 runs scored. Thus far, quickly, Matt, you're cool with what you received from Jonathan Scope?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's 2 months. I think the guy's got the power is real. Just going back on a point what Scott said, and I'm not attacking Scott. Everybody says this. I'm guilty of it, too. If you say, I really like this guy, if you really like somebody, you own that guy. Unless you do, one draft, or it's, the first or second round.
Sure.
Yeah. Where, you just got... You're just not in that area to draft
him. I think it's a great point. And it's not just Scott, right? I've said it a million times about Odubel on this show, and I don't own him, right? And I'm miserable at myself for not owning him. And I loved him, and I can own him right now. And I mean, choose not to.
I got outbid in two auctions for him.
All right. So, well, the fact is, I guess the point was, if you really liked him, you wouldn't get outbid twice, right? That's the way.
It's not that simple. I mean, at certain points in a draft, he comes up. You don't have enough money left, and somebody has more money left than you, and, they outbid you.
Let me ask the other one. I'll ask you, Corey, this. And it's George Springer, right? So, George Springer, His line is batting .243, 11 homers, 28 ribbies. Is that good enough for George Springer where he was drafted?
Let's see. Is that good enough for George Springer where he was drafted? I think, okay, first, what are you looking at? That's about the 12th outfield. He was about the 12th outfield off the board, top 40 player overall. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. He's giving you 32 runs scored so far in the season. You want the batting average to be about 20 points higher or so, but 11 home runs, 28 RBIs. Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. As a player that was drafted in the top 40.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little disappointed, but I'm overall not. I mean, how I viewed him coming into the season was the stolen bases weren't really going to be there. I mean, after last season where he had 19 attempts and was only successful 9 times, I think, like Corey said, you do want the batting average to be like .260-ish. I think that's still very possible. As long as he stays healthy, the runs scored will be there. The home runs, if he hits 30 home runs and bats .260 at the end of the season, even if he's not stealing bases, with the runs scored in the RBI categories, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I think you got to be a little bit disappointed. He doesn't have a single stolen base at all. You know, it's not to the point where you're thinking about benching this guy. I mean, the home runs are there. The RBIs are pretty good. The run scored are pretty good. You know, the batting average isn't great, but you know what, though? When you look at it just not in the scope of the overall numbers, he's gone on binges where he's been really, really hot.
Streaky.
You know, he's been streaky. I would have to say that for where he was drafted, I'd be a little bit disappointed, but just looking at him overall on my team, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, there's still 4 months left.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay, I think that's reasonable.
If we were drafted again today, I wouldn't draft him that high if we're having a midseason draft.
Okay, and that's completely fair. Now, Matt, you mentioned a couple minutes ago, you're buying in on John Lester, buying low if you can. Same with Jake Arrieta, if you can, if they're out there. It's hard to buy low, obviously, in fantasy baseball. Mm-hmm. Name that you have mentioned, actually, a bunch today, kind of in relation to Danny Salazar at the top, was Danny Duffy. He got bombed yesterday. Is there an opportunity to buy him low? Like, are owners low enough on him that they would be interested in selling him?
I think Danny Duffy is a very interesting case study. And just for the fact that last season we saw him make this transition and he was so damn good. It's like sometimes you see the strikeouts are real and they're there. He got beat up yesterday. I'm not going to hold it against him. He's been pitching pretty well lately. You know, he's had some really nice starts. And he's a guy that, yeah, with the current state and the current landscape, if I can get him, I'm going to go after him.
Scotty, do you think the Danny Duffy owners are kind of low enough that they could be like, listen, he's gotten bombed a couple of times here. I'm willing to trade him away.
He's had 3 games this season where he's allowed 6 earned runs or more, and he doesn't get a lot of support here. You're going to try to trade him? What are you going to get a return after a start like that? I'm a Danny Duffy owner. I got to ride with it.
Oh, I'd be happy to trade for him. I'll give you a trade offer for Danny Duffy. All right, there you go. Take a break. We'll come back. I got one more baseball note I want to get to. It's more football, of course, here in hour number 2. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning on Memorial Day.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Hour number 2 for the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Executive King, CTM Baseball's Matt Modica. 1 hour down, 1 more to go here on Memorial Day. Hope you're, of course, having a fantastic day off. If you have the opportunity to be off, certainly observing. Thanking the men and women, of course, all abroad, and all that good stuff. I want to ask you guys a baseball note before we transition into football here at the top of the hour. And actually, I have to do in Milwaukee. There's a bunch of stuff in the Milwaukee-Arizona game that I wanted to get to. And let's start with Jimmy Nelson, right, Scotty? Jimmy Nelson, 7 innings, 7 hits, 10 strikeouts, just 1 run allowed for Jimmy Nelson. ERA goes under 4. I think the best way to describe Nelson is he's a guy that you can play matchup to matchup, not somebody you kind of put in the lineup and forget about. But I think Jimmy Nelson, still, here we are 2 months in, still probably worth owning.
He certainly is. He's had back-to-back solid starts, and you know, when you have a start like that, you know, against a team that was really hitting well, that certainly opens eyes. I think in most 15-team leagues, he's got to be owned, but now in a 12-team league, he's available. I think he takes note of that, and there's going to be some heavy bidding for him during the upcoming week. You know, they pitch really well against the Diamondbacks this weekend, a team that has been hitting really well. Not only him, but Chase Anderson struck out a lot of Diamondbacks over the weekend, too.
Absolutely. Patty Corbin on the other side, Modica, 4 innings, 10 hits, 7 runs. He has not had it.
Yeah, Patty Corbin, he infuriates me. I'm not a fan. But getting back to Anderson and Nelson, I've owned both of these in 15-team leagues. I've cut both of them. So it's one of those things in a 15-team league, yeah, you're going to go back and forth with these guys. The problem with Anderson is he's improved. His swinging strike percentage definitely has improved, but he has way too many fly balls. It's like a 42% fly ball percentage.
So
the hard hits in the mid-30s, and that's going to be tough in Milwaukee come summertime.
Yeah, and you look at Corbin, his ERA is well over 5, and then you look at the rest of the Arizona staff, and their ERA is way below 4.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So I told you guys I've been in on Hernan Perez for a while. I know you want him on the Mets, Modica, and you just think he's a perfect player. He's gone kind of cold as of late. He was over 5 yesterday. As I said, it's been a bit of a cold stretch for him overall. On the other side of that, Domingo Santana has been much hotter. Domingo Santana hit his 7th home run of the season yesterday. If you had to pick one, I'll start with Matt. We'll go around the table. You have to pick one of these guys to own right now. I don't really care about the next 6 months, obviously. I care about right now. You pick one of these guys to own, Domingo Santana or Hernan Perez, right now. Who would you choose?
Domingo Santana.
Scotty?
Domingo Santana, 13 RBIs in his last 10 games.
It's hotter.
First career Grand Slam yesterday.
Corey?
Hat trick.
Domingo Santana, it is. All right, I should have made that move last night then. That was a mistake. All right, there you go. When we return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, let's get to some football, shall we? A lot of notes from Patriots OTAs. We're going to break that down on the other side. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Right from the promo. Into the intro music here on Memorial Day Monday, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I want to get into football in just 1 second with Patriots OTAs. But with the Brewers, there was one last major note from this game. That was Jonathan Villar, batted 7th yesterday. It was the lowest in the lineup he has batted all year. I saw that stat from Michael Florio on Twitter yesterday. The good Michael Florio, not, you know, pro football folks.
Yeah. Our guy.
The fantasy phenom.
Yes, of course. But whatever. So VR batted 7th, which put Keon Broxton in the leadoff spot. He had the leadoff triple yesterday, scored a couple of runs. VR in the 7th, Broxton in the leadoff. Is this something, Matt, we're going to see going forward?
I think maybe for a little bit. I mean, Keon Broxton has to deliver up at the leadoff spot. Jonathan VR is somebody that, you know, maybe I'm out there trying to acquire. Being that he's been dropped down in the order, people are a little sour on him. The strikeouts are up, the walks are down a little. He still has 12 strikeouts. His BABIP is under 300. He's a career 340 BABIP guy. I know the sample isn't the biggest, but I still got to think there's better days ahead for Jonathan Villar. Offers you multiple position eligibility. He's a guy I'm going to try and scoop up.
I remember doing in my insider reports before the season started, I remember I told you, like, a former GM said Jose Peraza is an overrated guy. This guy is a utility infielder being pressed into a bigger role that he's not suited for. Same guy said Jonathan Villar was going to be exposed like that and he was going to be a big bust this year. And this is a former GM who actually plays fantasy baseball. I didn't want to believe him, to be honest with you, but so far he's been right on.
He has been right on, and it's been a rough year for you, Jonathan VR, and I shouldn't say you, because obviously I'm one as well. When it comes to the New England Patriots backfield, for years it was always a mess. There was zero reliability. You fumble, you're out. There's no rhyme. There's no reason to what Bill Belichick would do. For the most part, that ended last year. Deion Lewis was out for most of the year. LeGarrette Blount had 25,000 touchdowns. And that was it. You didn't really use anybody else. And you didn't have to worry about anything else. And it was nice and it was easy. Perhaps too easy. Because now LeGarrette Blount is gone. He's in Philadelphia. We could, you know, argue about his value tomorrow. That's fine. But New England scores a lot of touchdowns, obviously.
They're champions.
They're champions, yes. They score a lot of touchdowns. So we always... We always are wanting running backs, and you always want somebody in New England because they're going to, again, score a lot of touchdowns. But who is that guy going to be? Going in the last year, it wasn't LeGarrette Blount that everyone was like, this is the guy that's going to be the most reliable guy. It was Deion Lewis. Everybody loved Deion Lewis. Of course, he was hurt and didn't play for half the year, but Deion Lewis was the guy that everyone thought, listen, we can finally trust this player. A year later, Deion Lewis is healthy, but no one's really saying that anymore. You remember what James White obviously did in the Super Bowl, where I still stand by he should have been the Super Bowl MVP. You have him there. When it comes to the bigger back role, this is a team that signed Rex Burkhead. This is a team that signed Mike Gillisley. There is no guarantee that I can see in this Patriots backfield. Corey, from what you have done thus far, in your preparation, in your drafts, what are you doing and what are you seeing when it comes to the Patriots backfield?
Trying to avoid, for the most part, trying to avoid. If I do get involved, it's not going to be one of the pass catchers, White or Lewis. It'll be Gillisley or Burkhead. Burkhead, very late. Gillisley, I can do it 9-10 round as a player that's not in my lineup, where I can kind of see what the situation is going to be, see what the role is going to be, and then insert him a little bit later on in the season. That's how I want to draft him. I think Gillisley, being a New England Patriot and how much they like him, it worked last year bringing Chris Hogan over from Buffalo. So I think that his ADP is going to be a little bit too high for my liking, but I can see myself doing it in around round 8 or so.
There was a report over the weekend that Deion Lewis is going to see a reduced role this year, and to your point about to Corey's point about with Chris Hogan. The Patriots, dating back to Wes Welker, do such an excellent job of scouting and then plucking away players that play within their own division. I get the feeling that even though James White did it once in a while, I feel like there is a possibility that the Patriots want to move on from the guys they already have, and that Gillisley is going to be that touchdown guy, and Rex Burkhead can actually be a dual threat kind of player for them. So if I'm ranking the guys that I want in New England, I'm probably going to go Gillisley first because I think he's going to be the guy to run the ball the most for touchdowns. I feel like Burkhead could play both roles, and those other guys could. There's a possibility that they could get bumped back in the pecking order.
Yeah, so Lewis would be hurt too.
So you're agreeing with Corey then that Gillisley would be the guy you're taking first, right? You said
probably, but you know, I don't feel like he can be one of my top two running backs, obviously, but I think, especially in a standard, I would have to give him strong consideration as a flex, like maybe in like 6th round or so.
So you're actually 2 rounds higher than Corey was. Yeah. Corey said 9-10. You could see himself doing it in the 8th. You're talking 6. You're even a little bit higher on Gillisley than Corey
is. In a standard league, touchdowns are the lifeblood.
Yep.
In a PPR, it may move it back around to the 7th.
Okay, so you're looking 6-7. Yeah. Obviously, Modica, you're the Bills fan here, right? You had seen the most of a Mike Gillisley. Both these guys mentioned great points about how good their scouting, the Patriots scouting is for other teams. They went out. The Bills made a decision to not tender Mike Gillisley at a certain level. Patriots made them pay, and they go and sign a Mike Gillisley, which basically signaled the end for LeGarrette Blount. You look at this Patriots backfield, what do you do about Gillisley, and what do you do about the rest of the Patriots running backs?
Well, I would rank it Gillisley 1, James White 2. Number 3, I mean, as much as I want to say Deion Lewis, I'd love to see him somewhere else healthy with a defined role, because the guy is immensely talented. But Rex Burkhart is another guy that has a lot of skills and can be a really good asset. I'm not sure how New England is going to use him. So the top two guys I'm targeting, I'm fine with Gillisley, say, in the 8th round, James White. You know, even if I got to take James White in the 9th or 10th, you know, depending upon how the running back situation is going, I think James White has shown us. I think he has the trust of the Patriots and Tom Brady. So I think those are the two guys I'm targeting.
In your draft that you're going on right now, has any of these Patriots running backs gone yet?
Yes, Gillislee went in the 8th round.
Okay.
Now, this is a little skewed because you got to take quarterbacks. You got to take multiple quarterbacks. So there was a run in, like, in, say, rounds 8 to 10 on quarterbacks. White was a guy that I had lined up for in the 11th round. I had the 5th pick. I was going to take him. He went with the 3rd pick in the 11th round. So I took Corey Coleman.
Okay, so there you go. So he went in the 8th round here. Roto Express Mock Draft, I know both of you guys are participating in that. Have we seen the Patriots running backs go there yet?
No.
What round is it?
7.
You want me to shut up now?
Yes.
All right, so there you go. But it's interesting, you just said to take him in the 8th, now it's the 7th round, and you want me to shut up? I just think it's very interesting. Mike Yosley, ultimately, though, Corey, you're right. He's going to be a guy that, as the picture gets clear a little bit, as the draft starts coming into clearer vision, his name is going to rise up.
Yeah, and then you definitely want to see what they say about the situation. They're not going to give you much in New England, but when they get in front of the microphones in the preseason, you talk to the OC and you talk to the players. I mean, you talk to the head coach, Belichick. I couldn't remember his name. As they talk him up, we'll start to see what happens. But you can't predict the New England thing, but I think the one that you can more than likely hit on the most is the Gillislee addition.
Let's also remember.
We talked about the unpredictability of it just from a week to week. You know, I don't think they stop doing that. They even if the other two guys get pushed back 1 week, they might want to pound it with Gillislee. The next week, maybe get Rex Burkhead open in space.
Let's also remember that Gillislee and Burkhead, both free agent signings, I believe Gillislee got slightly more money than Rex Burkhead, yeah, if that says anything. Now, it could be just because he was a restricted free agent, you know, whatever. I do want to remind everybody of that. He made the most money here. They went out and signed him, replaced the Garrett Blunt, who led the league in touchdowns last year, with this guy.
I think Gillislee is the more talented runner, pure runner. I think Burkhead's more versatile, but Gillislee is, if you want to give somebody the football, I think he's got more talent.
I think what the Patriots did, and what they did in free agency as opposed to using the draft this season, is going to make this team even more scarier because they got players for now. They really didn't use the draft. I think it was excellent what they did. And as a Bills fan, you know, I'm just going to watch them win another AFC East title.
I want to hear from hockey fans if this makes football more boring.
Probably like the hockey fan.
Are getting, not this type of hockey fan, but you say the hockey fans are talking about basketball. Well, I guess,
yeah,
you know, football is getting boring because here the Patriots are looking better.
When we come back, when we get a chance, I want to ask Scott about his mock draft team.
Sure.
This team that he's putting together on this mock draft.
Sure, we can absolutely do that. And of course, Roto Experts Mock Draft will be available on June 14th. And the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package becomes available to you. Make sure you look forward to that. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. It's the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package available on June 14th. When we come back, Corey can ask Scott whatever he wants about his draft. We're also going to get into Rob Gronkowski today and see where the panel is on him. I know Corey has very strong feelings there. Tomorrow we'll get into LeGarrette Blount and the Eagles running back situation, so look forward to that. Roto Experts in the Morning continues on here right after this. Mock Draft, as I mentioned, will be available for you inside the exclusive Edge package coming June 14th. You have a standard mock draft, PPR mock draft. Chance I'll be invited to that one. Probably not. Corey, how many rounds are you guys in? You said 7, right?
We're coming up on towards the end of the 7th round of this draft, so I'm pretty satisfied with the way the team has turned out so far. I had the 8th pick to start it. I went Melvin Gordon, came back in the 2nd with Dez Bryant. In the 3rd, I kept that safe, standard wide receiver that's going to be a touchdown scorer and rack up yards in Demaryius Thomas. In the 4th round, took the shot on Christian McCaffrey. Hopefully, Mike Shula can scheme it up and they get that thing rocking out there. In the 5th round, I did something I normally don't do. I took a tight end, and I took Jordan Reed. But listen, if it hits, this is a standard. In the PPR, I wouldn't like to do this. If it hits, we know Jordan Reed, excellent red zone target. Kirk Cousins love him. Still no real balance on that offense in D.C. Then in the 6th and 7th round, I took wide receiver 3, flexious type guys with Rishard Matthews and Cam Meredith. Obviously, I'm higher on Cam Meredith than a lot of people are. But if he breaks out as the number one wide receiver in Chicago or Mike Glennon, paying a 7th round price tag is not... It's something that I think is definitely would be worth it. So what do you think of that, Greg?
I think it's pretty solid. You know, I think that Jordan Reed pick stands out to me because, like you said, it's not something
I normally do.
I think it's interesting, and it's something I want to get into when we talk about Gronk in just a few moments. But before we do, I think I got a couple of questions for Scotty regarding his team.
Yeah, Scott, I love the way it looks up here with Matt Ryan, Ezekiel Elliott, and Tevin Coleman. What I wanted to ask you, though, is it seems to me that you took risk at wide receivers multiple times with Hopkins, Jeffrey Hill, and DeSean Jackson. I like all the players. I think they're all in decent situations fantasy-wise. We know Hopkins can be a top-five guy. Jeffrey, though, health, Hill, opportunity, and Jackson, health and opportunity.
I think when you look at where I've drafted some of these guys, I think there was certainly the best left on the board. I took Ezekiel Elliott, then I said on the wrap, I got to get the best wide receivers available. And I said, I think as long as Brock Osweiler is not throwing to DeAndre Hopkins and somebody else is, I like DeAndre Hopkins for a big bounce back year, especially with Deshaun Watson probably throwing to him. If not, you know, he's got a veteran throwing to him. We saw Brian Hoyer and you know, even lesser guys than him were able to do. It was Osweiler who really screwed him up because
took Baldwin.
Yeah.
Okay. If
the guy couldn't even throw a back shoulder fade. That's terrible. You know, did you watch yourself on film? And in Alshon Jeffrey, I think he's got a lot to prove. He really does. I think he's a very, very talented receiver now in a good situation with a good young quarterback. I think Alshon Jeffrey rebounds in a big, big way this year, and I'm willing to take the crack on that. Tyreek Hill, I got later in the draft as my third wide receiver. We talked about these gadget guys, but I'm going to take him as my number three. I'm fine with it. And then we're looking at DeSean Jackson as my flex in a new situation with a guy that can gun the ball downfield. And it's all about context about, you know, where I take these guys. I mean, you know, DeSean Jackson was seventh round.
I agree.
I like the pick in the seventh round. I just don't know if I'd like to pair up DeSean Jackson and Tyreek Hill on the team. I think Corey makes a good point. Like, none of the players you drafted are perceived as bad, right? Like, I think it's just there's a lot of question marks surrounding all four of them. Like,
I'm looking at a standard league. Sorry,
sure.
Guys are going to get in the end zone. I know Tyreek Hill is going to get in the end zone.
Right.
I feel like DeSean Jackson is going to get in the end zone. If this was PPR, these might not have been my picks.
Totally, and I totally understand that, and that's all good. I guess, and maybe this is Corey's, not issue, but question as well. I don't think any of the four wide receivers that you chose, and maybe it's just, you know, where they fell on the draft board.
They're not safe.
Exactly. There's not one that you know that you're going to be able to get 20 points from each week, and that's what would scare me.
I felt like at that point in the draft, receivers were flying off, and in a standard league, I'm looking at touchdown guys. I feel like Alshon Jeffrey, he's out there. I think he's the best chance. Like, he could be that best touchdown scorer, I think.
Oh, he certainly could be.
But on the Philadelphia Eagles.
No, but he also might not practice and then might miss every game.
I think he has a big bounce back year this year.
So you're actually very much in on Alshon.
Yeah, I'm in on a big rebound from DeAndre Hopkins. At that point, I had to take a guy who had a chance to be a star. I'm looking at the guys around him. There were a lot of guys that all within these ranges when I was picking that had question marks about not scoring enough touchdowns. And I had to look at that from a standard league because touchdowns are the lifeblood in a standard league.
So, all right, so you took chances on, let's say, health and effectiveness for guys that you think will be very touchdown heavy, right?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Matt, when it comes to your draft right now, is there anyone that in the draft, I know you can take a quick look here, that has kind of done the Scott model a little bit?
Let's see. I mean, I don't know if I could really put it that way. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey to me, I think, is an intriguing wide receiver. I'll say that because I'm a little torn on him. I don't really think I'm in on Jeffrey this season. I understand Scott's point. I think he makes a good case for him. And depending upon where he ends up going, but I think he's going to go in a spot where there's other guys I'd probably take the shot on.
I said this last week on the Fantasy Best Friends Forever. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to be out on Alshon Jeffrey ultimately. And it's funny because last year, Alshon Jeffrey was going at like the top of the third round. And everyone, and you had to be, that's where you had to draft in order to get him. And whenever anyone took him, it was always like, wow, you just got Alshon. Like, that was a great pick. It was a great steal. He has the ability to be a number one wide receiver. Then he got hurt. Then he got suspended. And, you know,
it fell apart.
It all fell apart for Alshon
Jeffrey. He's going to a situation with a quarterback that threw the ball over 600 times last year.
Yeah.
And it's not like the running game got that much better. So,
and there were a dozen receivers already off the board before I got a chance to pick him. A dozen.
That's this year. We're talking about last year. Corey, I'm agreeing with you where it was kind of like everything like looked right for him last year. Like, should have lined up in a contract year. Nobody else there. A team that's going to throw the ball 600 times, as you said.
No, I'm talking about in this year, Philadelphia.
Oh, in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia last year, they threw the ball 600 times.
Okay, sorry about that.
So he's going into a situation with a young quarterback that they want to wing it. Now, obviously, 600 passes, that's top five in the NFL last year with 607 attempts from Carson Wentz. So he goes into that offense. He could be a PPR monster if he can stay healthy. I don't mind the pick. I like Alshon Jeffrey. I'm in on him. You got to take a risk with a guy like this due to his injury. I just think a player like Demaryius Thomas is safer.
And was he available for you, Scotty?
Yes.
He was. Well, that's interesting. He was, but probably if I would have went somebody else, it probably would have been Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
How many touchdowns did Demaryius Thomas score last year?
Demaryius Thomas. 10? But Demaryius Thomas is a touchdown guy, though. You feel what I'm saying?
Give me 1 second.
He's going to get that. What are you about to say, Madika?
I was going to say, I think it's more relevant to PPR, but I was going to say, if you had the choice between Alshon Jeffrey or Golden Tate. Now, I think it's more of a PPR question.
He had 5 touchdowns last year.
Yeah.
6 the year before.
I felt like he's declining in that department.
Okay, I can dig that.
Keenan Allen was the other guy that I was strongly considering.
How many yards did Demaryius Thomas have?
Demaryius Thomas last year had 1,083. He's had at least 1,000 yards in each of the last 5 seasons.
I know, but the touchdowns have been so disappointing. I just trust.
I hate this. This sounds crazy, but I like Simeon a little bit more. Matt, you said Alshon Jeffrey or Golden Tate? Wow, that's a tough one, right there.
In a PPR, we're talking.
I would go with the upside of Alshon Jeffrey over the safety of Golden Tate in that scenario, but because I think you can get Golden Tate a little bit later on.
These guys went like 2 picks apart in my first draft. This is not
in a PPR, no doubt.
So I was just curious. I think that is a very tough call. So I think Golden Tate's floor, and I think he has some possibility for maybe a couple more touchdowns this season as well.
This is ridiculous. Golden Tate has not been drafted in this mock draft that we're doing.
Seriously? In the 7th round?
Not been drafted, yep.
That's crazy.
I would take Jeffrey.
Scott should probably take Golden Tate.
As far as Tate scoring more touchdowns, that's just not his game. His game is a lot of catches and yardage. I heard there were going to be more touchdowns last year. It didn't happen. He's not a touchdown guy.
They do have packages for him.
They
have packages for him inside the 10. That's the only reason why I say that.
I'll take the 90 catches. I'm not tripping off the touchdowns. I'll take the 90 catches.
In PPR, you're talking about 90 catches and 1,100 yards. Now, look, I didn't like Tate last year. I was very vocal on it. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'm not backing off of, though, is he's not a touchdown guy. 5'10", 197, he's got to score his touchdowns from outside the 10. If they're designing packages for him inside the 10, I think they're making a mistake.
Give me the 7 catches for 87 yards. That's 15 fantasy points.
I'm good with that in PPR. In standard, I don't want no part of him.
Are people going to get back in on Marvin Jones this year?
I'm not.
I was just looking where he went. He went pretty late.
Once defenses started paying attention to Marvin Jones and realizing he was out there and he was a thing, he couldn't beat press coverage.
He was mediocre in Cincinnati, too.
He went in the middle of the 11th round in my PPR draft.
Because I know Marvin Jones was a thing last August, right? And he started off like wildfire.
He had a 200-yard game.
Then they was like, oh, wait a minute, we got to guard this guy. And then when they started guarding him, it was like, he disappeared.
And it's funny, I'll tell you this. After literally week 5, people cut Golden Tate last year.
People were cutting Golden Tate. This is correct.
He got to a very bad start.
Because let me give you the first 5 games. 7 for 41, which is fine on PPR. 2 for 13, 4 for 40, 1 for 4, 3 for 39.
He was a little bit banged up. And if you look at those weeks, Theo Reddick was going crazy.
And you look at like the 90 catches for like 1,100 yards. He did it in a dozen games.
Right. Absolutely. It was a wild second half for him. But the inconsistency does scare me off a little bit of Golden Tate. Like, how do I know I'm going to second half Golden Tate, not first half?
In a standard league,
you'll get 90 receptions.
Yeah. In a PPR, yes. In a standard, no.
Okay.
Well, at least 9 of his last 10 games in PPR, he had double-digit points. He had one bad week at Jacksonville. but otherwise he did produce. And like I said, I think that he's just so solid. I mean, sometimes boring guys get overlooked. They're not the flashiest. And who's their wide receivers? I mean, Eric Ebron, I know people love him, but he seems to constantly disappoint.
I don't know if he's boring if you watch him. He's exciting, very exciting.
No, but I'm
catch.
Talking about as a draft.
Yeah, drafted player, the numbers.
You mentioned Eric Ebron. Corey mentioned Jordan Reed. When we come back, we bring up Rob Gronkowski. The value's changed. Does that change your opinion? That's my question for you. When we come back, this is the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Several years, Rob Gronkowski has been a first-round pick. Whether you like it or not, Rob Gronkowski has been a first-round pick. Whether it's the middle of the first round or the end of the first round, Gronk always went. That's not the case thus far in 2017. From what I have seen, you have seen Gronk go somewhere in the third round almost everywhere. To confirm this, where did he go in your draft?
He goes in the third round.
Third round. Where did he go in your draft, Matt?
Gronk went in the third round.
There you go. Okay, so Gronk, pretty universally here, is a third-round pick. Corey, you've been the most adamant at the table about Rob Gronkowski. You don't want him. It was a waste of a first-round pick. You were never taking Gronk. However, in my opinion, it has now changed. It's the third round at some point. Given where he is going now, given what he can give you, given that, listen, when he's healthy, he's essentially a wide receiver one at the tight end position. Have your feelings changed on Gronk?
I can stomach it in the third round. I would never do it. I can stomach it because you still look at the team. You had Julio, the team that took him in the mock draft. Julio Jones is a wide receiver one. Leonard Fournette is his running back one. His wide receiver two is Corey Davis. You see what I'm saying? But when he drafted Rob Gronkowski, it was dudes like Keenan Allen, Demaryius Thomas, Devontae Adams was on the board.
But can't you make the argument that Gronk should be better than all those guys?
Oh, how many games is Rob Gronkowski going to play?
How many games is Keenan Allen going to play?
This is true. I give you that much. I think Gronk's health is a little bit too much for me. I'd rather have more of the meat of my wide receivers and running backs filled out, at least two apiece, before I go in for a tight end. And he's not going to ever fall that far. You know, this team right here, Julio Jones, Corey Davis are the wide receivers 1 and 2. The running backs are Leonard Fournette, LeGarrette Blount, Amir Abdullah. The quarterback is Andrew Luck. He has a quarterback and a tight end in the first seven rounds.
Who drafted this team?
This is Michael Waterloo.
When did he draft the quarterback?
Draft the quarterback in round 7, the tight end in round 3.
Okay, that's not bad for the quarterback in round 7, but yeah, to Greg's point...
Rob Gronkowski is going to have a hell of a season to carry this team.
No, but to Greg's point is... You look at Gronk Gronkowski as a wide receiver one. That's why you bump Corey Davis back a little bit. You know, he's basically, yeah, he's playing tight end, but he's going to put up, you know, essentially the numbers of his wide receiver two. Other than that, you know, I'm kind of with you, though, because you got Jordan Reed two rounds later. And he stays healthy. He's going to possibly put up sure. spectacular numbers. So there's different ways to look at it. I don't know if I could do it in the third round because, to me, that's a prime pick, which a guy that always gets.
Matt, you're adamantly shaking your head no here.
I lived this experience last year.
Oh, that's right. You sure
did. I took Rob Gronkowski with the third pick in the third round in the New York NFC Super League, which was a $2,500 entry that was pretty much burning money. I can't do it again. I mean, if I was guaranteed was guaranteed these 75 catches, 1,100 yards, double the touchdowns, Rob Gronkowski, yeah, that's a different story. But in the last 4 years, he's sandwiched in two very good seasons that the Rob Gronkowski we know and love, and two seasons where, you know, you just can't put up with that.
And I still won in those two seasons when he had good years, and I didn't have him nowhere. I don't...
Yeah, it's just...
Don't do it for me.
I lived this, too, last year in the Greenwich Tree Tavern League. He was one of my... I think he was my second or third round pick last year. I can't remember. But when Gronk ran down, my team started falling apart.
I will tell you this. So I've never wound up drafting Gronk in this position. Or not for like literally the last 6 or 7 years. But I've never drafted Gronk in the first round, second or third. And in auctions, I've also never wound up with him. However, in each of the last 2 years in a league, it was actually the same league, I have traded for Gronk. For whatever reason, I had the pieces to acquire him. I can tell you, 2 years ago, I traded Devontae Freeman after a hot start for Gronk. Last year,
That was about even that year, though, right? Because Gronk played that whole season. But would you have rather got that production from your running back or from your tight end?
I would have rather... It didn't really matter. Ultimately, for my team... And I'll get to this point in a second, what I had to do. So I traded for Gronk twice. And then last year, I forget what I traded for. I think it was a good trade for me, as it turned out. But each of the last 2 years, after I traded for Gronk, I needed to trade him away.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have enough. That tight end, there was times that he was hurt last year, obviously. And the year before, like, he would have his good games. But as Corey just pointed out with Waterloo's team, it wasn't enough to carry me. I expected, like... We look at your team just a moment ago, Scotty, and you wanted this guarantee, right? We didn't think your wide receivers had that. And you could say, maybe Alshon will score the touchdowns, but ultimately, there's no safety net. And maybe Alshon Jeffrey or DeAndre Hopkins do become that for you. But when it came to Gronk, when I traded for him both years, when I traded away Devontae Freeman, it was because, listen, I thought I was getting a reliable wide receiver one where Devontae Freeman had a hot start. I thought he would come back down. Last year, when I traded for him, I thought I was getting this reliable tight end one, and I'm buying him low, and I'm buying him early. The second half of the year, with Brady back from suspension, he's going to explode. This didn't happen either year, and as I said, I had to trade him away twice to just get more pieces, to get a middle-of-the-pack tight end, the Kyle Rudolphs of the world, the Martellus Bennett of the world, which we were talking about earlier. I had to trade back and get one of those type of players, plus another piece to try to build the team better. I have figured, and literally, I have done this 2 years in a row where I've traded for Gronk and ultimately needed to trade him away because it wasn't good enough.
Now, you're a fantasy analyst.
Yes,
you're
sir.
An expert. Mm-hmm. And we're talking this whole thing through here, and we're making a lot of sense. But with the average mainstream player, I know it because I've seen it every year, the fascination with Gronk is never going to go away with the average player.
And just most because you times, draft him, he's not going to come pick you up at your house and take you on one of these wild parties with him.
Most of the
not
time.
Happen.
Most
Stop
of
your
the
bromance
time,
with
lot,
Gronk.
A lot of the time, when people, you talk about this bromance, when people want to make a trade and they don't have to, they always, in the average leagues, they gun for the top player at the position. So Gronk is always going to be a trade target, and I think, and still in some mainstream leagues, you're going to see him go at the end of the first round.
I don't know the end of the first this year, given the injuries that he had last year, but he's going to go early.
I think, no. Among us, no. I think in some mainstream leagues, and you talk about there are a lot of different people that listen to this network, where in their leagues, they're still going to be, Aaron Rodgers is going to go in the first round. In those same leagues, you're going to see Gronk go at the end of the first round.
Because Corey's point about, Gronk's not picking you up. Gronk's not going to the wild parties. I'm going to tell you what. People, Scott's point as well. People want to draft Gronk, so when he gets in the end zone, you're going to take your ball in your own house, and you're going to spike the thing, spike a pillow, and you're going to run around.
It's a bromance.
Gronk,
it's a bromance.
It is, but if I got to take a gamble on the health issue here and just look at another talented tight end who can't stay on the field, I'll take a gamble, 3 or 4 rounds later on Tyler Eifert, who seems to get in the end zone.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, when on the field, is very, very efficient, but just seems to not be able to stay on the
Let's pause on Tyler Eifert for a second because I want to get back to Corey's Jordan Reed, right? You took Jordan Reed in the 5th round.
Yeah.
Where did Jordan Reed go in your draft, Matt?
Jordan Reed went in the 4th round.
Okay, so Jordan Reed, a round separate from Gronk. Here it was 2 rounds separate from Gronk. Now, Reed is another one of these tight ends, like Eifert and Gronk, that can't stay on the field. But
Reed could be a hit away.
Yeah.
Legitimately a hit away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even just talking about retirement.
Yeah.
Like, he could be a hit away. Why did you feel comfortable? Like, you don't do this.
Yep.
Why did you feel comfortable doing it in the 5th round?
Because it was the fifth round. I already had the meat of my lineup built out with Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, Melvin Gordon, and Christian McCaffrey. If I see the tight end slip to 5, I will seriously consider it. I still think the running game is going to have some issues there.
What wide receivers are available there?
The wide receivers, Emmanuel Sanders, Jarvis Landry. Mind you, this is a standard. Julian Edelman, Brandon Cooks, Rashad Matthews. Come on. The wide receivers were eight. When you're going through a draft board, right, and you notice when you get to like the fifth round and you notice, wait a minute, the dudes I normally like to take in this spot are not here. That means another position is falling. More than likely, that position is going to be tight end. Jordan Reed was sitting there in the fifth round. I already got the meat of my lineup together already. I'm going to take him. If Gronk was there in the fifth, I'd have took him.
Okay. Hey, Corey, let me ask you a question. The guy that took Gronk in my league, let me hear if you like this team. I think you might actually really like this team. It's LeSean McCoy,
yeah.
T.Y. Hilton, Gronk, Isaiah Crowell, Tom Brady, Eric Decker, Rashad Matthews, Frank Gore, Doug Martin, Hunter Henry, and Jeremy Maclin.
That's actually not
I like that team.
Let me write that down. It's like you said, you had Shady and T.Y., right?
That started. Then it went Gronk.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then he went back to the running back position, Crowell.
Shady and Crowell.
Uh-huh.
And you got T.Y. So then he takes Tom Brady. You get, Brady
and Gronk.
Two quarterback consensus.
Sure.
Eric Decker becomes
Decker's
his
two. Deckers is wide receiver two.
And Rashad Matthews is three if you want to flip them.
I don't
That's not terrible.
That's not terrible. That's
Jordan
not.
Reed 2 years ago had a Gronk-like season. Last year, his first
he had a Gronk-like four,
three,
season.
Three games.
He was hurt.
the numbers he put up.
Yeah.
Like a Gronk almost like pure like 14-game type season. Last year, the numbers were down, but like for the last 8 weeks, they were really, really good. Overall numbers were down, but if you look at the game log last year,
he was very good during this. He was awesome.
That's what I'm saying.
He was amazing.
That's what I'm saying. The last half of the season, he was very, very good. You wait two rounds later, you get an almost comparable tight end.
Not the last half of the season. Remember, he got hurt. It was like a separated shoulder. And he came back for the last three games. He couldn't move, right? Like he had one catch.
Remember that? Yeah, uh-huh.
He literally couldn't move.
I'm sorry. I meant
in the middle
last,
of season.
The last eight games of his, like the first eight games of his season, he was really, really good.
It was that middle of the season where he was unstoppable. But he got hurt. Just like we know, like he was concussed. He hurt his shoulder last year. This is the issue with Jordan Reed. And then you can get to Tyler Eifert. It's the same thing. There's another guy that can't stay on the field.
Is what I'm saying.
You're right. You're right. But none of these guys, if those are your top three tight ends, maybe they aren't. If those are your top three tight ends, there are major, major injury questions. Plus performance questions with all of them.
But all of them are hurt. All of these tight ends are hurt.
All of them. There's zero reliability whatsoever at this position.
The most healthiest ones are Jason Witten and Greg Olsen.
You're right.
40-year-old dudes.
Go look at Tyler Eifert's 2015 season.
But I'll tell you this. This is why I don't think I'm taking Gronk or Jordan Reed or Eifert, because they're going to get hurt. Give me a guy that's going to be healthy. And I'll get a tight end later. When we come back, one last football note, we'll wrap up the show. It's Memorial Day Monday. Roto Experts in the Morning wraps up after this. Wrapping up a Memorial Day weekend, Memorial Day Monday, I should say, edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. To wrap up the show today, I think we should talk about an American named Michael Vick.
How about that? Michael Vick getting ready to retire a Falcon, right?
No! That's the whole thing!
They haven't done it yet.
So Michael Vick came out with this whole statement like, oh, we're going to retire a Falcon. I'm going to sign this one-day contract. And he had to backtrack. He's like, yeah. So I didn't actually talk to anybody about that. I just kind of want it to happen. So like, you know, if you want to retire, if you want to sign me a one-day contract, that's cool. If you want to like put me in like the Ring of Honor, like that would be cool, or like retire my number. And everyone's like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, what?
He was campaigning.
Basically campaigning.
But why?
Didn't it come up recently
contracts?
That he was going to play in some professional flag football league or something? I didn't see that.
I just don't get the one-day contract.
Retire an Atlanta Falcon. Do you think he deserves to retire an Atlanta Falcon, though?
Supposedly, he's still close to Arthur Blank. And I don't want to know if this is the thing. Like, why wouldn't... If he wants to retire a Falcon, Arthur Blank's like, yeah, sure, we're best friends. Sign the contract.
That's what I'm saying. It should be done. Or maybe Arthur Blank and they got more important things to handle. 28-3. They just ain't get around to it yet. You feel what I'm saying?
It's a one-day contract.
Who the hell ever remembers that somebody retiring as this or that? They went and signed that damn contract.
You know what? I think it's just personal to these people, to the players themselves. Right? Yeah. Like Maurice Jones.
They officially retired as a member of their organization.
Exactly. He'll be remembered as a Falcon.
Correct. Vic will remember as a Falcon. Maurice Jones Drew will remember as a Jaguar. Right. And there's plenty of others along the way. But I think it's very, very interesting that the one-day contract has become a thing to retire as a member.
DeMarcus Ware signed a one-day contract.
Sure. Peyton Manning signed a one-day contract, too.
Exactly. To retire as a Colt.
Yes, sir.
And then DeMarcus Ware with the Cowboys. That's a sentimental thing. Do you think Michael Vick deserves it, though? And what if Matt Ryan's a flop and that team is terrible still? They got lucky with Matt Ryan.
They got lucky in that, right?
Well, they made a good pick.
Yeah, they made a good pick. Absolutely.
Michael Vick had his best years as a Falcon. Mm-hmm. So.
Had a phenomenal year in Philadelphia.
He won some
fantasy championships.
He became what he was.
I think it's interesting because I remember when Michael Vick came out, like
he was an icon in that
electric.
City.
He was electric. He was the most electrifying player they're ever going to play. He goes into Green Bay, wins at Lambeau. I mean, that was nuts. And it all just ended in the snap of a finger. It was just...
It was more than a snap of a finger.
it was probably the snap of a neck, to be honest.
It's some court documents. Yeah. And
stupidity
will
get you every time.
A lot of people rolled on him, you know what I'm saying? His family members and stuff like that. But, you know,
I watched Football Life with Michael Vick, and it was interesting, though. But despite all of that, you know, I think you got to salute him for doing his time and kind of turning things around.
I know, look, I'm an animal lover. He paid a big price, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And in America, we forgive people for a lot of stuff. So, you know, as long as, you know, he was at the pinnacle at one point.
Do you think, okay, so what if Arthur...
He got a $100 million contract twice.
Let me ask you this. If Arthur Blank's like, you know what, dude, I don't want you to sign it. We moved on. Matt Ryan's been the guy, like... We're not doing the one-day contract thing. What if, like, Philadelphia is like, all right, we'll sign you to a one-day contract? Do you think you accept that?
I don't think anybody's going to.
I can't do that.
Okay, also, do you think these guys get paid on a one-day contract? Do you think DeMarcus Ware got money?
They probably like, no, it's not no contract.
$20?
Yeah.
I bet it's something. I bet there's a financial thing involved.
Maybe.
I think Michael Vick's trying to make some money.
I think Michael Vick
maybe
probably
part
got
of the
money.
Contract is like if we're tiring your number in a ceremony, maybe you get a cut.
Something.
Yeah.
There's something. That is going to do it for us on Memorial Day. The four of us will be back here tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Eastern for a brand new edition of the Roto Experts. Have a fantastic Memorial Day. Try to stay dry, stay warm, eat some good food, and of course listen to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. For Matt Modica, for Scott Angle, for Corey Barson, my name is Greg Sussman. Have a fantastic Monday. We'll see you tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern. Have a great one, everybody. Bye-bye.